Welcome to What a Ride with Rupert Guinness and Aaron Essley. I'm Aaron Essley.
And I'm Rupert Guinness.
And we are recording live once again here at the Lord Dudley here in Sydney, Australia. One of our favorite haunts. Rup, an absolutely big week here. You're heading off in literally just a few hours to the Tour de France.
That's right, Aaron. Looking forward to this year's tour. It's going to be, I say this every year, it looks like it's going to be a cracker tour, but that's partly hope, partly the excitement for the race. But I really do believe this year's tour, with the big four contenders for overall, and I'm sure some others will have a say that they would like to see themselves in that four. You know, you've got Contador, Quintana, Froome, and Nibali. But as we heard, TJ Van Garderen thinks he can be up there on the podium as well, so maybe he may think it should be a big five. But anyway.
Absolutely. Going back, you've been covering the sport for some 30 years. When's the last time you've seen a field so deep of general classification contenders?
Well, I was rattling my brain the other night about that, but
that's that noise I heard.
It is. There's something in there, a loose bolt somewhere. But in actual fact, perception goes a long way, because I read an article by John Wilcoxon in Peloton magazine where he actually sort of... I didn't necessarily agree with every point he made, but he did make reference to a couple of the previous tours where we've had, when Fignon's been in the tour, and Delgado, Le Monde, and I mean, they were pretty deep fields too. You know, you had there were a couple of years there in the 80s where there were, four contenders. So it's easy how history can sort of get forgotten in a way. But certainly this is... this is a crackerjack field for sure, no problem at all.
Yeah, of course, last week we actually talked about Phil Anderson and the Australian who became the first non-European to wear the yellow jersey. Now, he didn't win it, but he was the first to wear it. And we talked about what a difference that would be if he accomplished such a feat today with the advent and the popularity of social media. It goes back to what you were saying just then, that again, history kind of forgets itself, but maybe more is being made of this because there is just so much more exposure, and obviously the sport is probably more popular than it's ever been.
Yeah, it's certainly much more internationalized anyway. So I think, like I said, I'm also correcting myself on what I thought was, I think I might have said either here on What a Ride, or I might have said it at a dinner the other night at Eastern Suburbs Cycling Club in Sydney, and I was saying I think this is the greatest depth of overall contenders I've seen since I can remember covering the tour, but obviously I'd forgotten a few tours. So we're all open to that, but it just shows the power of history and how it can forget itself. And I just think with the information overload there is now, poor little brains like mine can only handle so much at a time.
Do you have a quick race, pre-race favorite? Do you have one that you just stands out to you as the one to beat, or is it just way too early to tell?
I think it's always way too early, but you've always got to put your name on the line somewhere. But I've got Quintana is the guy. There's only, if he can get through the first, minimize his losses in the first stage time trial, and get through the first week safely, I think the tour is great for him. But one thing...
That being said, though, is that because you feel he is by far the better rider for this race, or is it because he'll have the fresher legs of the other riders?
Well, he may not necessarily have the fresher legs, because Chris Froome's got the less racing in his legs. So but I just think he, it's that extra percentage of having not won the tour yet, so that hunger will be there. I like his team, Movistar. I think... they're not a team of stars, but just put them together, the old cliche, put them together, they're a strong, loyal, reliable team. Although it'd be interesting to see whether the Valverde-Quintana aspect, how that plays out. I still wouldn't be surprised at hearing that there's a lot of support through the heart for Valverde within the team, where even though the brain may say we've got to go for Quintana. So that may be something that could go against him. Just one other factor that I think is really important is the... With Nibali, huge importance for him, not just to win it outright, but to also win it and show that last year's win was a commanding win, not just on the time that he had on the other two guys on the podium last year, with Froome and Contador having crashed out, but also, I think Nibali's going to really relish the first week. He's as exposed to the dangers of crashing in that nervous first week with the cobbles and narrow roads and stuff, but he can embrace that challenge, so that he won't be nervous about it. As we saw last year, the cobblestone stages where he made, you know, some significant time, and I think he'll be enjoying that coming into it, knowing that the other guys like Contador, Froome, and Quintana could be pretty nervous about it.
Now, of course, as we record this, actually a day earlier than normal, because obviously you'll be heading out shortly. I'll be heading to China in 2 days for the Tour of Qinghai Lakes. Talking about the Tour de France, though, as we record this again, there's been some preliminary rosters that have been put out there over the last 2 or 3 days. Nothing final yet. Most of those teams will be making the announcements, including Orica Green Edge, the Australian World Tour team, tomorrow in London, which will be Tuesday. Anything that you're thinking, any surprises that may happen? I talked to Matty White earlier in the week and talked to him about the Yates brothers, mm-hmm. and their possible inclusion. The only thing he said for sure was that Esteban Chavez would definitely be in Colombia, resting up for the Vuelta, as would Canadian Christian Meyer. So those were the only two definites that he gave me would not be on the team. Anything that you're thinking? You said there wouldn't be as many Australians this year.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Does that surprise you?
Look, I don't. Not at all, because I think that the team, it's an Australian team, and we shouldn't lose our attachment from what I'm about to say. But it's also a team. It's an international team as well. I don't believe in quotas. I think you've got to put in the Tour de France. It's such a big race. It's so important, and every rider and every team is at their top level. You can't afford, I don't believe, to get bang for your buck out of your team that you can compromise its strength by going on a quota of whether how many from the home nation are in it or not. I think you've just got to put the best riders out there for what you want to achieve for that tour, whether it's an overall classification or stage wins or the green jersey or whatever. You've got to put the very best team out there. One assumes when you do your roster to begin with, you've got everyone on your roster are all people that you want to have watching your back, no matter whether they're Spanish or Italian or Australian, you know, they're your teammates.
One thing he did mention was that obviously there would be fewer Australians on this team, but it would be, quite honestly, the best Grand Tour team they've ever assembled.
Yeah, look, I believe it's going to be it's a very good team. It's one which will be equipped for those early couple of weeks, or for the early sort of week and 10 days. They'll always be for the favourites for the stage 9 team time trial. Then you get into the halfway point of the tour, and then you're looking at the mountains. And, with the Yates brothers there, I think it's a great experience for them.
So does that mean you think that both Yates brothers will
Matt
go?
Matt White told me back in March they would definitely go.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what it is.
He told me back in March. I mean, obviously you have to back up a word like that by, having the form and preparation.
And, of course, those kids, they're young men that, 22 years of age.
22. And they're both coming in with reasonable, with good form. Obviously, Simon Yates got fifth in the Criterium du Dauphiné.
Now, Adam, his brother, his identical twin, actually had crashed earlier in the year, breaking his finger, required surgery. Not quite in the form that maybe Simon is, but it's going to take a few weeks before the tour, another week before the tour starts, and a couple more weeks until it goes uphill.
Yeah, exactly. And the important thing is, he started the year with his ninth in Tirreno Adriatico, and then hurt his finger. He raced the Criterium du Dauphiné. Obviously, his brother Simon was doing well. He came, I think,
third on the youth podium.
Yeah, and fifth overall, and Adam, at that point, obviously Adam was doing his best to, he finished 20th on GC, but he's riding for his brother, and so you think he's going to come in strong, and as you said, Aaron, he can ride into that top-end form for the third week where it'll count.
Well, you're exactly right, and I think that's the thing that's going to be so dynamic and interesting for the Australian fans, at least, is that, you said it earlier, the Orica Green Edge has always done quite well with the individual time trials. They've done very well in the first couple of weeks on the flat to intermediate stages, but now they've actually got not just a one punch, but a 1-2 double threat system going into that third week when it goes uphill.
Yeah. But they won't be going for GC, won't be going for overall classification. That would be, I think, it's too early to expect that or demand that of the Yates twins. I mean, it's worth reminding that the Yates twins and, as you said, Esteban Chavez, who won't be doing the tour, but he'll be doing the Vuelta, they're seen as the three guys within Orica Green Edge who could develop from within as Grand Tour contenders. And they've also come from that seed of the culture that's already there without having to import someone from outside, in which case they'd have to change everything around and get new bed sheets and all that sort of stuff, you know.
Absolutely. And of course, as a reminder, Simon Yates did race the Tour last year. They pulled him out 2 weeks into it deliberately.
But interestingly, he was pretty pissed off about it.
Exactly.
And then Whitey said, "I'm glad."
Yeah.
Because I'd hate to see him if he was like, "Oh right, I want to go to the beach now." You know, because he's got that fire. Fire.
Well, and of course, Adam did not race the Tour last year. Raced the Vuelta instead. But one thing that Matt White told me earlier this week was that basically these guys aren't afraid of anyone or anything.
No, not at all. Not at all. They're not. It's interesting that you know, the Orica Green Edge are having their team announcement in London. So obviously they realise one huge massive media opportunity for Orica Green Edge to do a public launch in London, which makes me think are there other elements to that story at all. I mean, it's interesting that British Tyre, you know, the team's always looking for new sponsors. You just wonder whether there's something linked anyway. But certainly, I think for the fact that these two brothers will be able to get a lot of attention, media, English media attention. It'll be good for the team, good for them. I'm sure we'll put through the grill. It'll be interesting to see how they are come the official pre-tour press conferences in Utrecht. Are they exhausted from answering all the same questions again?
Absolutely. Well, of course, we're going to talk more about the Tour de France, more about Orica Green Edge, potentially more about the Yates brothers, and obviously a lot of road nationals over the weekend as well, including the British Road Nationals. We're going to get into that a little bit later.
Look forward to it.
Survival design.
And we're back with more What a Ride with Rupert Guinness and Aaron S. Lee on the Australian Broadcast Media Network. I am Aaron S. Lee.
And I'm Rupert Guinness. You thought I ducked off then, didn't you?
No, absolutely. He's a busy man, buddy. Listen, we were obviously talking about the Tour de France. You can't help but talk the Tour de France. You're leaving just literally within a couple of hours for 3 weeks to cover the race. Or 4 weeks, really.
4 weeks, yeah.
I'll be leaving for China, the Tour of Qinghai Lakes, on Wednesday night. It's a 13-stage race. They're the UCI Asia Tour, 2HC. So I'll be over in the Asia Tour. We will still be bringing you plenty of What a Ride over the next few weeks, so please stay tuned. Again, Australian Broadcast Media Network, Radio Sydney, 36 FM stations, 200 digital, and available for download on your phone. We were talking about the Tour de France, and thinking about the Tour Down Under, it has been a long season. We talked about that the other day. You know, when you look at this past weekend, there was a lot of action going on with the Road Nationals. Any surprises out of that, especially a lot of revolving around the British cycling, the British Road Race Championships?
Yeah, well, Pete Kinnock, defended his title.
Absolutely.
He's had a good year this year. He's had, and, you know, I remember seeing him when he was down in Adelaide, and had a good chat with him then, and about how hoped that the season to pan out, and, he's talking about how much he's enjoying his racing now and everything, and, then he had a good ride at the Cadel Evans Great Ocean Road Race, and just sort of been tracking along ever since then. But he that's a terrific win by him. I mean, Mark Cavendish rode very well in that race as well, which is kind of a good indicator of the form he's coming into the Tour de France with as well. But Pete Kenyuk, I think he's a spirited rider. He's not shy of having a dig and going on the attack,
absolutely. A couple of days earlier was the time trial, and with Alex Dowsett, who briefly held, well, it was obviously broken by Sir Bradley Wiggins a few weeks later. Alex Dowsett winning his fourth individual time trial national championship. A bit of controversy there. A few minutes ago, I just left the bike shop. Now, the British Cycling Federation put out a media release afterwards saying that Alex Dowsett tied Stuart Dangerfield's record of four individual time trials. Well, Stuart Dangerfield, British champion, Olympic, 2004 Olympian, who was a replacement of David Miller back in Athens, two-time Commonwealth Games rider. I bumped into him here in Sydney. He lives here in Sydney with his family, and he said they got it incorrect.
You mean he's blown up? He's had a stink. There's a stink.
Yeah, a bit. And he was a bit upset that, in fact, that he has won the national title six times.
Well, that's a big difference, isn't it?
It's a huge difference. And, of course, we put in, as we did with the Ann Gripper story last week, we're on top of things here at What a Ride.
Yep.
And I put in a request. Obviously, it was midnight when I did. I'm chasing that story up as we speak to find out where's the confusion. Is it with British Cycling, or is it with
Stuart Dangerfield?
Stuart Dangerfield, the man they call Dangerous. Now, he did say he does have the trophies, he has the medals, he's got his name on it, so he knows. He said the funny thing is, and we went to the British Cycling website just to verify on the results, there were no past results for the time trial at all on the site, but we did see on Wikipedia that they did result, they had to show the results from back to 1997. So perhaps the media officer at British Cycling is using Wikipedia to verify their fact. Wouldn't be the first time we've seen that.
Wouldn't be the first time for a lot of things. But I think interesting though. I mean, this is when you really need to go back to one of the old magazines. I mean, too bad the magazine I used to work for, Winning Magazine, doesn't exist, because we'd have to have those. We'd have those records. Cycling Weekly may have those records.
You're
putting out an APB to
anyone out there,
all
listening,
cycling historians.
Yes, please get in touch with What a Ride. Hashtag What a Ride.
Who's right, the BCF or Stuart Dangerfield?
Absolutely. You know, that kind of reminds me. You know, we both go back quite again 30 year journalism career, 20 here. I mean, I can remember when there was no such thing as, we didn't have cell phones, we didn't have the smartphones, or bloody hell, just getting into laptop computers. I remember calling stories in over a payphone to a sub-editor after an event. That being said, you would probably remember the cans and string era.
Cans and string, and
but that being said,
pigeons.
You remember we used to have, at least back in the States, I'm from the US, Louisiana.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. For those listening around the world, I am from the United States, and of course Rupert, being born and bred here in New South Wales.
Well, actually, I was born in England.
Were you really?
No, you didn't know that.
No, I didn't.
I came out here when Breaking I was 4 years. I came out to Australia when I was 4. No, no, no. A lot of people know that. Nah. So it's best.
Well,
I
that explains the Union Jack tattoo on your. That explains it. But you remember the days though when again we used to get the almanacs, the sports almanacs that had the records and had the previous years, and you just lived by that.
Now you just get those USB sticks. Then you lose those.
A lot going on. One of the guys that we were talking about, the Australians going to the Tour de France, we're not sure yet, but I'm very interested. By the time this does hit the air, you will know if Nathan Haas from Cannondale Garmin, the Cameron, if he makes the team. He has spent the last couple of weeks with teammate Andrew Talansky, the American, up in Andorra, at altitude about 2,000 meters. He's hoping to go. Nathan Haas has been up to a little, up to his usual off-the-bike antics, and he's doing some different stuff. Now, he's one that's obviously a mountain biker turned roadie, but he's known to croon a little bit on his YouTube channel with his guitar, including singing songs with his sister. But he's developed, with a couple of other guys, a pro cycling playing card game.
Yeah,
and he's getting it out there. It's called Attack the Pack. So we want to promote that out there. And always good to see the cyclists doing something off the bike.
It's good. It's a bit of forward thinking, and I mean, it's not necessarily planning for the afterlife of a rider, but it just shows that they can think out of the box, which will be important when they do retire. You know, so Nathan Hansen's like that. You know, Adam Hansen. You know, with his shoes.
Absolutely.
You know, they're these guys are people who are thinking out of the box, and they're very much their own people. And not only they're just the characters for us to write about, but I just think it's refreshing to see that they're people who are thinking for themselves and just looking beyond just the front wheel in front of them.
You know, we had a chance, or you had a chance at the Giro d'Italia to really to kind of bank a few interviews for us for What a Ride, and we've been showcasing those over the last 4 weeks. One that we still have left in the vault, so to speak, is Dan Jones. We talked about it last week that we would be airing this interview. Explain to the audience listening at home who Dan Jones is.
Well, Dan Jones, a lot of people will know who follow Oracle Green Edge, and they do their Insiders video, the Backstage Pass. So he was the creator, producer, the star. No, he does. You know, he gives other people their time in the under the spotlight. But he's taken. It was very important when Oracle Green Edge started, and I know Jerry Ryan, the owner, was wanting this, that the team was able to offer something new to its supporter base, and not just in merchandising and stuff. It needed to offer something new that was going to be workable on the internet, and this something happened to be a window that Backstage Pass has become, you know, into the team, beyond just the stand-up interviews and stuff like that. It, you know, Dan Jones, through his him being with the team full time, you know, he lives and breathes the team. He's a part of the team, you know, and so they're used to him being around, and he's very good at filming the key intimate moments without being invasive as well. And so that helps the supporters who are following the team to feel like they're seeing things unfold. And he's very conscious of that, not being invasive, but he has to be inside there, you know.
And being inside the way he is, he really is able to bring out a lot of the personality in these riders.
Oh, certainly. I think he, so it hasn't helped just for the video's sake. It's actually helped for the culture and atmosphere of the team. He knows how to, it could be a moment where a bit of lightness is needed. You know, he's very good at, pressing which button of which rider or which circumstance to be able to do that. He's very much part of that team. So I had a chat to him on the last day of the Giro, just as things were all wrapping up. And usually at that time, everyone's in good moods then, because whether you've won or lost or been beaten or battered, bruised or whatever, you're just happy that day because it's come to an end. And it was a good chance for me to catch up with Dan just to get his take about what he thinks about his job, where it'll take him in the future. Does he have any plans for the Tour de France? And what sort of little, if he does have any special insights that we're going to see during the Tour. Why he's a mad AFL fan / Hawks, I don't know. I mean, I'm a rugby guy. I can't wear those short shorts, but Dan obviously can. No, actually, Dan probably can't wear those short shorts. But anyway, he gave a good, nice insight about, life on the team and what he's doing, and there's more to this man than meets the eye.
Well, let's go to that interview now. More with Rupert Guinness with Dan Jones.
There we go. Well, I'm speaking with Jones, the executive chair of many for Green Edge and for water. And how are you doing of a number? But tell us how you're also, we've got the coming up.
Well, after that intro there, right? No, I'm pretty cooked, mate. I'm coming down with a bit of a head. I think, like, we'll gas for the right staff is pretty full on. You know, he's back so day. I mean, I don't know, I'm vapor, but time off France. I'm out to Australia or so. Me, the fam, take it easy. The big one in July, so we're all pretty pumped about that, mate.
I guess when you get back to Australia, you're going to go and try and pump up the Mighty Hawks as well.
Yeah, exactly. We're playing St Kilda next weekend, and that my brother-in-law and his co-works the kids into going for St Kilda. So I think we'll there's a bit of a family rivalry there, Roop. So now pretty G'd for it, mate.
Hey Dan, obviously with the backstage pass, I mean it's given the followers of Orica Green Edge and also the other teams and rivals an insider's view of how a team has not only operates day by day but how it's developed since its creation in 2012. Can you tell us a bit how the idea came up and did you expect it to be as popular as it is now?
Well, basically it all came about. We had a cycling website before I started with this team, Oz Cycling, and the fundamental of that was the goal was I just wanted people to get to know the cyclists a bit better, and I've never been driven by the actual cycling side of things. It's more the personalities and what makes these guys tick. So when I started with the team, Jerry basically gave me a clean slate and said, you know, just remember that we're in the entertainment industry, you know, our category sport and our section cycling. And with a blueprint like that, you know, you pretty much got license to just go out and do whatever you want. And for me, like, I'd done a couple of cycling docos before, so the backstage pass concept was just an evolution of that. And I thought, well, I want to see if I can possibly do this with a quick turnaround, like do them every day. And I first started that with Tour of California back in 2012, and we did the week there and got through it. All right, we'll try it for the tour. And in terms of the reception, I just knew with the characters that we had that it probably would get a bit of a cult following, and I said to the guys when I very first started with the team, like, this whole thing is going to be driven by one thing, and that's trust. You know, if they get to trust me and trust what I'm doing, then I can be on the buses, I can sort of get in the inner sanctum, but they know I won't abuse that, and that's the thing that I probably treasure the most. But I mean, the reaction we get from the fans and the comments and even riders from other teams, you know, like I hear Bernie Eisel coming up and laughing about things that he saw, you know, it's fantastic. And I'd like to see more teams do the similar sort of concept, you know. We tried it with Sky versus Orica Greenwich last year. We're trying to sort of branch it out a little bit more, but, you know, I'd like to see more teams sort of do something similar.
Obviously, you know, you show a lot of the character of the team, and I guess, you know, there's a lot of the funny side of sport, the good times, but I think one of the things I've noticed, is what you've touched on, that balance of also showing the hardship of the sport, and even moments which are, you know, quite sensitive for the riders. And I was just wondering, can you sort of, a couple of prime examples of which have been the hardest moments, and also perhaps the funniest moments?
Well, one of the toughest was Paris-Roubaix last year. For me, we started doing these sort of director's cut ones, and, you know, I wanted to show people that are not really a one-trick pony. You know, I can sort of mix it up, the format. And for that year was Matt Heyman had never really, he'd ridden the Paris-Roubaix 13 or 14 times, but never really had that true leader's role. So he was going into that, you know, pretty psyched for a good result. And then when it didn't happen, he had a bit of bad luck. Just the honesty in his voice, you know, like after the finish, whenever things don't happen the way you want it, that's the most awkward time. So you don't really want to stick a camera in their face and say, hey, give us a quote. I sort of waited till he calmed down and just said, listen, mate, I'm not going to tell you what to say. You just say whatever you want. And just the honesty that was coming out in his voice, and then the footage of him in the velodrome where he had the realisation that it didn't go to plan, you know, those moments that stick out in your head. But then, like, funny, lighthearted stuff. I mean, take the Giro here. I mean, we had a fan, Giorgio, just sort of waltz his way onto the bus, and I challenge any sporting team in the world to do what we did with that fan, you know, made him feel part of it. Whitey kicked Peter Weeding out of Gero's seat so that he could have prime posse for the team meeting. I mean, that sort of stuff. I mean, we don't encourage it. Since then, we've had heaps of people wanting to just walk on the bus and get that sort of access. But, I mean, it's, every now and then, it's really cool to show that this sport is driven by the fans and the sponsors, and we try and engage with them as much as we can, and moments like that are pretty cool.
I think that is true. You know, the uniqueness of cycling is that the intimacy between the rider and the punter. As we are standing here now in Torino, for the last stage, you've got crowds all around the buses here. As you said, occasionally one or two just walk straight in. It's like, can you imagine that at a football stadium, someone going into a locker room, into the Hawks locker room?
No, that would not happen, Root. But that is probably what makes cycling just that special sport as well. I mean, you're not playing in footy arenas. You're going out the front of people's homes, and they're not paying big admission fees. It's all free. And there's not many sports as well, Root, that, like, you know, say going to Hawthorn St Kilda next weekend, we're going to pick our sides, and that's who we're going for. Cycling, the fans cheer for everyone, so that's what makes the sport pretty cool, though.
Now, of course, we've got the Tour de France coming up. Firstly, have you got any new... Can you give us a couple of teasers of what we may be expecting from Backstage Pass for July?
Yeah, look, the Tour's a trickier one because there's a few more restrictions that are put on me, so our job is to sort of give viewers more of an insight what you won't see on TV. So I'll definitely be going Avant Course with Julian that again. I'm not too sure in terms of... There you go, the Lamprey bus is just going past. I'm not too sure about doing another music video, but I've put the feelers out for Jerry to try and pull in some bigwigs, like celebrity types, that we can get in the car on Backstage Pass, because that's a surefire winner. You know, if you were to jag an Eric Banner or something like that to spend a day with the team, that would be unreal. So I think we're probably trying to go down that path, mate.
Look, I'm going to be probably kind of busy. I'm not sure I'll be available, but Dan, and what about one day? Do you think we'll see the Backstage Pass, the movie?
Well, yeah, I think the day that it sort of wraps up and I say, well, it's time to move on to something else, I'll go through the archives and I'll probably put together a 90-minute film on the journey, because we've documented, I reckon there'd be 500 hours of footage at least, and if you can't turn something good in 90 minutes out of all that archival footage, then you might as well find a different career, mate.
I'm glad you don't film the Monday lunch after the Tour de France, because we may lose the footage, I think.
Yeah, you've been privy to a few of those Monday post-tour lunches, mate, and they're one of my highlights of the year. I can't remember too many of them, but I definitely know that they're right up there. Well, here comes Alberto Contador, mate. Look at the stampede.
Well, there you go. We talk about the intimacy of the crowds. There's literally hundreds of people just chasing him, and the Saxo team are trying to get through. There goes Olive Tinkoff with his hair pink. Speaking of which, last day, sensations. I remember last year's Giro. You put the kit on, you put all the numbers on.
Yeah.
You wouldn't get better to do that in any other sport, would you?
No. And I was pretty close to busting that jersey open too. I mean, the biggest size we had was a large. And then to make matters worse, you know, there was a 5K climb at the sign on. As you said, Rube, it's a special sports cycling. There's not many that let you sign on for like the Giro. But haven't done it this year. One, the fitness level's sort of plummeted, and two, they don't have a kit up to like triple XL.
Well, Dan, look, thanks for that insight, and you know, just to say thank you for all you do with Backstage Pass and the team as well, for creating that atmosphere in the team where you're able to fit into that, because I know it's really important and it's unique in that way, and it allows us and all the fans also to see that, and it really is not underestimated what you do, Dan, and all the very best, and have a great Tour de France as well.
Good on you, Roop, and even from a fan of your work as well, mate, we're all part of the same goal, and that is to sort of build the brand of cycling to as many people as we can. So even from our side of the fence, mate, big fan of what you do, and thanks for having me on your show. Traveling in a freighter combi on a hippie trailhead full of zombies, I met a strange lady, she made me nervous. She took me in and gave me breakfast. And she said, do you come from a land down under? Where women glow and men blunder. Can't you hear, can't you hear that?
I said, do you speak my language? He just smiled and gave me a Vegemite sandwich. And he said, I come from a land, 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 land.
Behind the lens, yeah. So now he'll have to steer away from him now during the tour, I think. But, yeah, no, look, he's a guy I think he'll be doing some great things after he, not saying he's leaving the team, but when in his future he will be. But I think certainly, actually one of the funniest things about Dan Jones, I remember he, at the end of the Giro 2 years ago, when they only had two riders there left in the team, and it was Fane Tuft and Michael Heppner. And in the last day, do you know what Dan Jones did? He got into one of the Orica Greenwich team time trial suits, managed to get into it, and he put every one of the numbers of the guys who weren't there. So for the last sign, and he went through the crowd, through the Tifosi, and stepped up to sign on the podium. Only the Giro could you get away with that. The Tour de France, Bernardino would have pushed you off straight away. But Dan Jones did the whole thing. And the whole team did it okay. And, actually the team actually got permission from the organisers, I understand, that he could do it. So that was really nice that the organisers are able to play into the spirit of somebody trying to do something quirky from Australia. So,
absolutely. Yeah. Well, I tell you what, you banked a lot of great interviews while you're the Giro d'Italia. Can't wait to see what you're going to bring back to What a Ride at the Tour de France.
I can't wait either. I'm really enjoying it. And, we've got some exciting things planned for the Sydney Morning Herald /Fairfax media coverage as well, with some videos that I was doing during the Giro, so we're doing more of those, and trying to sort of cover it a bit differently this year as well. Obviously a bit more of a multimedia sort of style, because that's a lot of where things are going, but there'll still be the usual analysis and everything, which will be online and also in the paper as well.
Absolutely. You mentioned the Sydney Morning Herald. That's where they can find your coverage of the Tour de France. Where else can they find your coverage for pro cycling and sport?
Oh look! During the Tour de France, it's mainly on Fairfax Media, because now that the event's got so big and busy, you really have to focus on what's your main gig there. And that's okay. There's a couple of other probably do a bit for cycling news, some insights there, and we'll be seeing a good friend, Rob Arnold from Ride Magazine, he's going over, so we'll catch up with a chat for him over there.
And I got a text message this morning from young Zeb Woodpower, the Asia Pacific editor for Cycling News, and he's headed over there for the first time. So he's a colleague, so you'll be able to see him as well.
Well, I should actually catch up for a chat with him to see what his impressions of his first tour at the start and at the finish.
Well, I'd like to just know, because for those listening at home that aren't familiar with Zeb, it'll be interesting what style he's going to go with. The freshly coiffed look or the bouffant?
Oh, yeah, the bouffant or the Don Quixote.
Yes. Young Zeb Woodpower. He's older beyond his years for sure. More Water Ride with Rupert Guinness and Aaron S. Lee right after this. And we're back with more What a Ride with Rupert Guinness and Aaron S. Lee. I'm Aaron S. Lee.
And I'm Rupert Guinness.
You know, we, for those listening at home, obviously we are coming to you from our favorite haunt live, recording live, at the Lord Dudley here in beautiful and stunning Sydney, Australia. On a beautiful winter's day, Rupert Guinness will be heading off shortly, just within the hour or two, to the Tour de France, and I'm about 2 days away from heading over to China for a little Asia Tour gathering with 2HC race, Tour Chiang Lakes. And Rup, just for the folks listening at home again, where can they find your information? Where can they find your material? You've covered the sport 30 years, mate. You've got to have some avenues.
Yeah. No, this will be my 27th tour, and you know, I'll be covering it this year again for Fairfax Media, for the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age, and all the associated newspapers and websites, online sites, as I was saying before, you know, we'll be doing some videos, some different interviews with different people, some more multimedia styled interactive.
Is that with Sydney Morning Herald? Will you be doing any of that for Eurosport this year, like you did with the Giro?
No, this will be the Sydney Morning Herald. Okay. Yeah, it's been Sydney Morning Herald, focusing mainly, you know, on Fairfax Media. And they're obviously...
That's your bread and butter, mate.
That's my bread and butter, yeah. That's my day job.
Yeah. Hello, Ian.
Hello, Ian Fuse. No, but it's actually really good that the Fairfax Media have sort of got on board with the tour in the last years, particularly since, you know, Cadel Evans is, you know, when he came to the fore. And I joined the Fairfax in 2007, and that year he got second, and then Fairfax has committed to sending somebody over every year. Fortunately, I've been that guy. But you know, it's a commitment which you know, sounds simple, and a lot of people who are cycling fans may say so it should be, but it shouldn't never be assumed that it'll happen, you know, because it's from a mainstream media point of view, it's still a fresh sport. It still has to prove itself, and it is proving itself. But every time you go again, you know, there is the usual banter of jokes from the office saying I'm going on my holiday and blah blah blah, but there is a fair responsibility to come up with the coverage that justifies paying someone to go there.
Well, of course, you and I, we catch up quite often, even off the show, and I remember catching up with you over the weekend. I went down to Canberra and had a beautiful weekend there. I tell you, probably more pro cyclists, mountain bikers and triathletes, BMXers in Canberra than anywhere else in Australia per capita. It's a great place to ride and grow up. I rate Canberra as a whole. I, not that they're waiting for my approval or anything like that, but I really enjoyed the trip down there. But you had a busy weekend covering the other sport that you cover, which is rugby.
Rugby.
Yeah. I gotta ask you, how'd those Waratahs go?
Oh, look, it was a pretty heavy weekend from that point of view. It didn't go very well at all.
And, of course, explain, the Waratahs being Super Rugby?
Waratahs, the New South Wales Waratahs being the Super Rugby team that won last year's Super Rugby title. So they were going for back-to-back titles. On Saturday night was the semi-final at home at Allianz Stadium at Moore Park in Sydney. And they were playing the Highlanders from New Zealand, from Dunedin. And the Highlanders did an absolute job on the Waratahs. There was a controversial penalty try awarded to the Highlanders in the 58th minute, but by no means, no matter whatever the argument is over that, by no means did that make or break the difference, you know, make the difference in whether the Waratahs were going to win. They were trounced, done and dusted, and that's not the same team as last year. And on the other side of the ditch over in Wellington, the Hurricanes from Wellington, who finished top of the table in the round series after 18 rounds, they did a job on the ACT Brumbies, your now favourite rugby team.
Well, I tell you, not only that, but the Hurricanes being one, Scott Ambrose from Team Novo Nordisk, his favourite team, as we discussed last week on the show as well.
Well, there you go. So it's all linked, isn't it?
It's all linked. As a matter of fact, you weren't the only cycling aficionado at the Waratahs. I saw on Instagram, or maybe it had been Facebook, one Luke Davison, an Australian team track pursuit Olympic Rio gold medalist hopeful contender. He was at the Waratahs game as well, taking some photos, saying "Go Tars!" But again,
he totally said "Go Tars!" Just like that.
Go the Tars! Or go the good on you.
You should be like "Go Tars!"
Yeah, it's hard to get that inflection. And I wonder if it was one social media.
I wonder if it was one of the was 32,000 there. One of these, one of the 31,998 who yelled abuse at the referee Craig Joubert for the penalty try, which I still think was fairly awarded. That's my point of view. But Now I'm going to get all those 31,989.
Hey, Mel. And by the way, you can find Rupert Guinness at Rupert Guinness. That's with two N's and two S's on Guinness on Twitter, at Rupert Guinness. And, of course, he is on Facebook, and you can befriend him. He'll eagerly accept that. Rupert, you haven't been using your Twitter much.
No.
As a matter of fact, is that going to change, though, Tour de France?
Look, no, look, it's, you know...
Because you've got some stats saying Twitter's down. It's on the way out.
Well, look, put it this way, Facebook is five times more traction.
Well, there you
Facebook,
go.
I enjoy Facebook much more. You get, you know, it's a bit more expansive sort of mode, form of communication than 140 characters, and it's not a very... look, I prefer Facebook. I'll leave it at that.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that you cover rugby for the Sydney Morning Herald. Obviously, we've been talking about that. I cover pro triathlon on the side, but we still come back to pro cycling. And again, nothing bigger than this month in pro cycling. While I'm going to China, you're going to France. There's nothing bigger than the Tour de France. It is one of the biggest sports spectacles in the world.
When you're in China, it'll be interesting to see how news filters back to China. And how does the Tour de France become the brief of the, you know, like Tour of Guinchao? Does that become the main story? And meanwhile,
it'll be interesting.
Chris Froome won the 15th stage.
Well, I'll have that information for you, and we can exchange notes. We will be conducting more What a Ride while we are apart, so we'll be bringing your daily dose of cycling, triathlon, endurance sport, bit of rugby. So, and please feel free to log on and to Twitter or Facebook and find us. We're there. You can't miss it. Rupert Guinness. There's only one. Absolutely. Rupert Guinness on Twitter. He's on Facebook, Instagram. Same. Aaron S. Lee. But you can find me at Aaron Shane Lee on Twitter, Facebook. Give us questions. Send us emails. Let us know what you want to hear. And we'll answer it. And in due time. It's as soon as we can, actually. But you know, one of the things that I want to talk to you about before we head out. This is going to be a bit of a bridge show. Because you got a plane to catch. You mentioned 27 years of the Tour de France. Do you have a favorite? Is there one memory? Is there something that stands out that you just go, you know what? And it could be something that has nothing to do with the race itself.
One standout moment.
Yeah. Or can you just pull one?
Look, excuse me. I think, look, I mean, it's going to take a lot to, I mean, it's obvious and it's going to take a lot to beat it because I longed for it for so long to cover it, but that was obviously Cadel's win, you know, in that day when he walked into the, after the time trial in Grenoble, and he walked into the press room for his Tour Winners press conference. It's pretty hard to beat the emotion of that. But, so that's probably, I can choose the good, the bad, and the ugly, or the good, you know. So that's probably the best moment. The worst moment was still, that still stands out with me, is the death of Fabio Casatelli in the Tour when he went in the Pyrenees and they crashed, and, you know, it was an innocuous sort of crash, but it was so costly and it was so drawn out, and we're in the middle of the Pyrenees and it was such a long day. And that particular, you know, he rode for Motorola, and I saw him that morning, and I said to someone, "Gee, he's the one guy, the team I've never written a story about, because I was following Motorola very closely." And then, little did you know, it was going to be the story you would write about, and was going to be the worst story you could possibly imagine. And then you've got. I still remember my first Tour. I always will. You know, turning up, flying into West Berlin. I took a flight from London. We flew into West Berlin. We had to. I remember dipping. The plane's the wings dipped as we flew across. We saw the wall between East and West Berlin, and it was quite a spectacular view from above, seeing two worlds apart. And obviously, we landed into West Berlin, and for me, that was the start of the buzz of that that day. Just continued for the most part ever since then, since 1987. And there was one little odd moment. I will tell you. Well, I thought it was funny. Maybe our erstwhile colleague Andy Hood didn't think it was funny. I know he didn't at the time. Andy Hood, the European correspondent for Velo News, him and I were in the car one night, and we were looking for a hotel. And it was one of those 1 o'clock in the morning things, and we can't find the hotel. Then we get to it, and it's got the front gate is closed, and. I'm doing a radio broadcast back to ABC Grandstand, and we're in the middle of France. And Andy Hood, he's an American guy, but he lives in Spain. He loves the late nights and how everything stays open late at night. In France, during the Tour de France, everything closes so early. And anyway, Andy's sort of frustration was building over the days. And there we were, just sort of at the hotel. Andy said, I said to Andy, I've got to make this quick phone call. I just got to do this radio broadcast. He's okay, I'll go and check, you know, and he checks the gates closed. And we can't even get the car in. And while I'm being asked by ABC Grandstand, must be amazing, Rupert, the atmosphere and the ambience of the tour, the festival spirit and all this sort of stuff. And it's like, you know, it's in the darkness of night and there's nothing going on around. And suddenly all you hear in the background is, God damn effort, France, friggin' France. And there's Andy kicking the gate. I had to just press on the little button, so at the windows. Oh yeah, the atmosphere is fantastic in France. And it's just, I remember looking out the window, just seeing Andy kicking and belting this this door in. But anyway,
typical American though.
That's what I was. Andy, I just shook my head a bit.
Absolutely great story. By the way, you can we had Andrew Hood, we had Andy Hood at Euro Hoodie on the show on episode 2. We had his colleague from Velo News and also Cycling Weekly, Gregor Brown.
Yeah, he'll be travelling with me in the tour. And we've also
got personal attaché.
no, don't tell him that. We've also got an extra little special guest this year. David Walsh will be back in the car.
From
the Sunday Times.
Now, that being said,
Seven Deadly Sins.
Yes. Oh, there you go. There'll be some good stories there, and hopefully we'll catch some of those on Water Ride.
Yeah, I know, yeah. I'll definitely have a chat to him, you know, for you all during Water Ride. And
because I think you guys have a movie in common coming up soon.
Yeah, well, he has his movie.
Yes.
Again, he has his movie. There is a cameo appearance by somebody pretending to be me, yes, supposedly.
Which you can catch on the trailer. Again, you can log on to Water Ride Radio Facebook and you'll get that trailer. There is no Water Ride Radio Facebook at the moment. Anyway, listen, Rue, we know you got to go. You got to head out of here. Thank you so much for joining us again today. Obviously, we couldn't do this show. This is a love, isn't it?
Yeah, it's great, Aaron. And but I wish you all the best in China, mate. Stay safe.
And by the way, for the record, it is the highest elevation pro cycling race in the world. So
there you go.
Is it the highest? So there you go.
So like elevation, like from bottom to top,
for the entire race, it is held at the highest elevation.
See, okay, well that's interesting.
Yeah, but you can't say that about your race.
Oh, dear. Well, you better stay safe and stay well, because you could get a bit, you get hypoxia. Is that what you call it?
I think you could. Something
that says oxia anyway.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. And listen, Rupert and I both live in Sydney, Australia, which even on a winter's day is a beautiful, sunny, it's gorgeous day. I do not own any winter clothes, but I mean, it's got to be cheap in China.
Yeah.
So I just purchased them there, and hopefully when our book comes out, we can talk more about my trip to China and the ordeal that took to get there. Speaking of books, you did mention you've written 13. We talked about the Tour de France. You talked about one of your favorite moments, which was Cadel Evans. You actually chronicled that book with Cadel.
Yep. It was just a sort of inside story on his win from the sort of started from the end of his previous tour, 2010, which ended in disaster, sort of looking at what he got out of that, how he felt after that, and then rebuilded himself and his team and his goals and focus and just went through to the point where he ultimately bagged and jagged it, stacked and racked it, and said, thank you, ma'am.
Absolutely, which is hopefully what we're going to do. As we take two different flights to two different sides of the world, and if it sounds like a good gig, it is.
What a ride.
What a ride. Thank you, Rupert.
Terrific, Aaron. All the best.